one sense everything, but I am independent. I am not under the modes of material nature, for they, on the contrary, are within me. Chibir gunamayer bhavir ebisarvam idam jagat mohita nabijanati mam evyam paramavyayam.
Chibir gunamayer bhavir ebisarvam idam jagat mohitam nabijanati mam evyam paramavyayam.
Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. Daivihi esa gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mam evye prapadyante mayamitam tarantite.
Devi he ishugunamayi mama maya duratyaya mam evye prapadyante mayamitam tarantite.
This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Namam duskritina mudha prabhadyante naradama maya pita jnana asuram bhavamasritaha.
Namam duskritina mudha prabhadyante naradama maya farta jnana asuram bhavamasrita.
Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Chatur vidava jante man jana sukritina rirjana arto jigyasu artarti gyanicha bharatarsaba.
Chatur vidava jante man jana sukritno arjuna arto jinasur artarti gyanicha bharatarsaba.
O best of the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me: the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Tesam jnani nitya yukto eka bhaktir visishyate priyohi jnanino tyartam aham sacha mama priya.
Tesam jnani nitya yukta eka bhaktir visishyate priyohi jnanino tyartam aham sacha mama priya.
Of these, the one who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service is the best, for I am very dear to him, and he is dear to me.
Udara sarva evaite jnani tvatmaiva me matam astita sahi yuktatma mam evam uttamam gatim. Udara sarva eva te jnani tav atma viva me matam asti hatta shaye yuktatma mama eva nuttamam gatim.
All these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls, but he who is situated in knowledge of me, I consider to be just like my own self. Being engaged in my transcendental service, he is sure to attain me, the highest and most perfect goal. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavam mam prapadyante vasudeva saramiti samahatma sudurlabha.
Bahunam janmanamante gyanavanam prapadyate vasudeva sarviti samahatma sudurlabha.
After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Kamais tais tar hitigyana prapadyante nya devata tam tam niyamam astaya prakritya niyatak swaya.
Kamais
tais tar hitigyana prapadyante nya devata tam tam niyamam astaya prakritya niyatak swaya. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta shadaya chitamichyati tasyatasyachalam shridchadham tameva vidadam yaham.
Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta shadaya chitamichyati tasyatasyachalam shridchadham tameva vidadam yaham.
I am in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity.
Sataya shadaya yuktas
tasya radhanamihate labhate chattata kaman maya eva vihitan hitan
sadaya yukta
tasya radhanamihate labhate chattata kaman maya eva vihitan hitan. Endowed with such a faith, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and obtains his desires, but in actuality these benefits are bestowed by me alone. Antavattu phalam te san tad bhavati alpamedasam devan deva yajo yanti madbhakta yanti mam api.
Antavattu phalam te sam tad bhavati alpamedasam devan devo yajo yanti madbhakta yanti mam api.
Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. Avyaktim vyaktim apanam manyate mam abudaya parambhavam ajananto mamavyayam anuttamam.
Avyaktam vyaktim apanam manyate mam abudaya parambhavam ajananto mamavyayam anuttamam.
Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of God, Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. Naham prakasa sarvasa yogamaya samanvritaha mudoyam nabijananti lokomam ajamavyayam.
Naham prakasa sarvasya yogamaya samvarta mudoyam nabijananti lokomam ajamavyayam.
I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore, they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjana bhavishyami chabutani mamtu vedana kaschana.
Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjana bhavishyami chabutani mamtu vedana kaschana.
O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me, no one knows. Icha dvesa samutena dvandva mohena bharata sarvabhutani samhoham sarge yanti parantapa.
Icha dvesa samutena dvandva mohena bharata sarvabhutani samhoham sarge yanti parantapa.
O Skyan of Bharata, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. Yesam twantakitam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva mohanirmukta bhajante mam dhritavrataha.
Yesam tva antagatam papam jnanam punya karmanam te dvandva mohana nirmukta bhajante mam dhritavrataha.
Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Chara marana mokshaya mam asritya yatanti te brahmata dvidu krishnam adhyatmam karma chakilam.
Jara marana mokshaya mam ashritya yatanti te brahmata dvidu krishnam adhyatmam karma chakilam.
Intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. They are actually Brahman because they entirely know everything about transcendental activities. Sadiputadi devamam sadiyagyam chate vidu prayanakali pichamam te vidu yukta cheta saha.
Sadiputadi devamam sadiyagyam chate vidu
prayanakale pichamam devidurukta chetasah. Those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Person, Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods and of all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. Today we're continuing in this chapter, and we are going over the opulences of the Lord, beginning with verse number 8. Rasoham apsukunteya prabhasmi sasisuraya pranava sarvavedesu sabdeke purusham risu. So, O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun, the moon, the syllable om in the Vedic mantras, and I am sound in ether and ability in man. So these are the Lord's opulences, or vibhutis. They are mystical in one sense, because you see the opulence, but you don't see the Lord. Therefore, it's mystical. But actually, the opulence is the indication of the Lord's presence, because it's coming from him. So the taste in water, the light of the sun and the moon, the om pranava, syllable, and sound vibration in the ether, and ability in man. So how do we understand these things as the opulences of God and not of the particular objects that emit them? For this you have to have a deeper understanding. Like, for example, rasoham apsukunteya, I am the taste in water. Well, what is the taste of water exactly? As we explained before, distilled water has no taste. It's proven scientifically. So then what is the taste in water? It's the minerals that are dissolved in the water. Now, where do those minerals come from? Bhumir apo nalo vayu kam mano buddhireva cha hankaram itiyame bina pakritirastada. So if we look back on verse number 4, Krishna says, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, all together these 8 constitute my separated material energies. So these things were created by Krishna. And this is his apara prakriti, his inferior spiritual energy. There's a superior spiritual energy, the living entities like us, and the inferior spiritual energy, the apara prakriti, made up of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So everything we see is a combination of the para and apara prakriti. Prakriti means that which is controlled by the Lord. So he has an inferior spiritual energy and a superior spiritual energy. So the minerals that we taste in water and the water itself have been created by Krishna from his own energies, right? Therefore, it's an opulence of the Lord. Whether you see a mountain, you see a river, or you taste the minerals in the water, all of that is coming originally from Krishna. From this verse, 7:4, right? So now he's becoming specific. Okay, just like you have an erector set or you have a Lego set, right? Now, the Legos were not made by you. But once you have that set of Legos, now you can make things with it, right? You can make cars and airplanes and boats and so many things. So, but you didn't create the Legos. Right? Somebody else made them. So in the same way, we didn't create earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. Krishna created them. But when our spirit soul, our jiva, atma, is placed in the material world, and we have certain desires that we want to achieve, then we receive a particular type of body commensurate to our previous karma and unfulfilled desires. And therefore, you know, let's say Brahma takes the Lego set, right, that Krishna has produced for him, and he puts together a body. And there are 8,400,000 types of bodies or species. You have fish, You have reptiles, and you have insects, and you have birds, and you have mammals, and you have human beings, and you have plants. You put them all together, there are 8,400,000 species. And there's a verse in the Padma Purana that's much more specific about that, and it says, Jalaja, one second. Jalaja Navalakshani Stavara Lakshavam Vimsati Krimaya Rudra Sankhyaka Pakshinam Dasa Lakshanam Trimsa Lakshani Pasava Chatur Lakshani Manava. So you have Jalaja, aquatics, and then you have Stavara, plants, unmoving things, right? And then you have, so the you have 900,000 types of aquatics. You have 1,100,000 types of plants. I'm sorry, you have 2 million types of plants and trees and so forth. You have 1,100,000 species of insects and reptiles. You have 1 million species of birds. And then as far as mammals, four-legged, you have 3 million varieties. And you have 400,000 human species. This is not only on the earth. This is throughout the whole universe. Okay, and this is from the Padma Purana. So, Brahma can produce, Brahma is the original Prajapati, and then he produces other sons who are Prajapatis. Like, for example, you have Pulastya is one. I'm thinking of another one. You have Diti and no, not Daksha. There's another one. Diti, Aditi, and Dana. They're three wives of Kashyapa Muni, right? So he has actually more wives than that. He's the father of birds. You know, Garuda is born from him and his wife, right? Then and there are reptiles and insects, as well as all the devatas, and well as all the asuras and the danas, who are mixtures of devas and asuras. He's one Prajapati. He's created all these different living entities. And of course there are others, like you said, Pulastya and his Daksha, and his other Prajapatis, or generators of species of living entities in the universe. And Brahma is the Pitamaha, or the grandsire of all the Prajapatis, right? But they can only create these bodies out of the original elements that Krishna has made: earth, water, fire, air, and so forth. So there's the sarira linga, the gross bodies, and the subtle body. So everybody has a gross and a subtle body covering the soul. The gross body is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether, and the subtle body is made of mind, intelligence, and false ego. So this gross body dies. Subtle body does not die. It's much more, let's say, hardy, permanent. It's not eternal, but the subtle body will carry the soul to a next gross body. The soul is eternal. But when one attains complete liberation from the cycle of birth and death, the subtle body is dissolved. And they go. You go back to Godhead in your pure spiritual body with its own purified senses and so forth, and mind and intelligence and purified ego. So, therefore, this rasoham apsakunteya, those minerals in the water, that's coming from Krishna. And then it says, prabhasmi sasi suraya, the light of the sun. And when Krishna says, I am the light of the sun and the moon, well, we have to look later on in the 13th chapter of Krishna, where the light of the sun is actually coming from, it's a reflection of the spiritual light in the spiritual world called the Brahma Jyoti. And it's being reflected by the sun and the moon. So that's also Krishna, because it's coming from him. Right? It's not produced like scientists say, well, you know, you have all these things, this intense heat and the sun, and it's causing all these molecules and different things to be emitted and so forth. But the original light of the sun is coming from the Brahma Jyoti. And this is explained in verse, one second, let me find it. If we turn to verse number, chapter 15, verse number 12. Aditya yad adityakatam tejo jagat basayate kilam yachchandra masicha yachchakno tat tejo vidimamakam. The splendor of the sun, which dissipates the darkness of this whole world, comes from me. And the splendor of the moon and the splendor of fire are also from me, Krishna says. And Prabhupada in the purport explains, the unintelligent cannot understand how things are taking place, but one can begin to be established in knowledge by understanding what the Lord explains here. Everyone sees the sun, moon, fire, and electricity. One should simply try to understand that the splendor of the sun, the splendor of the moon, the splendor of electricity or fire are coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In such a conception of life, the beginning of Krishna consciousness lies a great deal of advancement for the conditioned soul in this material world. The living entities are essentially the parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, and he is giving herewith the hint how they can come back to Godhead, back to home. From this verse, we can understand that the sun is illuminating the whole solar system. There are different universes, so that right there is a difference between the mundane astronomers and scientists and the Vedic knowledge. The mundane astronomers and scientists think that every star is independently producing light, but actually all the stars, including the moon, are reflecting the light of the sun, and the sun itself is reflecting the light of the Brahma Jyoti coming from the spiritual world. As stated, there are different universes and solar systems, and there are different suns, moons, and planets also, but in each universe there is only one sun. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 10.21, the moon is one of the stars, nakshatranam ahamsasi. Sunlight is due to the spiritual effulgence in the spiritual sky of the Supreme Lord. With the rise of the sun, the activities of human beings are set up. They set fire to prepare their foodstuff. They set fire to start the factories, etc. So many things are done with the help of fire. Therefore, sunrise, fire, and moonlight are so pleasing to the living entities. Without their help, no living entity can live. So if one can understand that the light and splendor of the sun, moon, and fire are emanating from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, then one's Krishna consciousness will begin. By the moon sign, all the vegetables are nourished. In other words, the light of the moon makes vegetables and fruits succulent, very tasty. The moonshine is so pleasing that people can easily understand that they are living by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Without his mercy, there cannot be sun. Without his mercy, there cannot be moon. And without his mercy, there cannot be fire. And without the help of sun, moon, and fire, no one can live. These are some thoughts to provoke Krishna consciousness in the conditioned soul. So, you see, this is, the Bhagavad Gita reveals how we can see Krishna present in everything that we look at. That means you become Krishna conscious. What is material consciousness? You look at something, you don't see the presence of God. You see it separate from God. You don't see God, you just see the material thing. You look at a tree, you just see a tree. But spiritual vision is, as it is summarized in that famous verse, Sahasrashirsha Purushaha, right, that's 7 in 7:18 in 19 in the purport Sahasra Sirsa Purushaha Sahasraksha Sahasrapat Sabumin Visruto Vritva Tyatistata Sangulam Purusha Ividam Sarva Yad Bhutam Yaj Chabhavyam Utam Ritat Vasyasano Yad Anena Tirohati. So this is from quoted in the Svetasvatara Upanishad, but also it's part of the Purusha Sukta prayers offered to the Lord. He is all that was and all that will be. He is the Lord of immortality and all that is nourished by food. Lord Vishnu has thousands of heads, thousands of eyes, thousands of feet. He is encompassing the whole universe. He still extends beyond it. In other words, his mercy is everything. He is the cause of all causes, and so forth. So these verses from the Upanishads are explained much more in detail here in Bhagavad Gita. And when we get to the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's exhaustive elaboration and detail. So, therefore, we see that when Krishna says, I am the taste of water, I am the light of the sun and the moon, Pranava Sarva Vedesu, I am the syllable Om in the Vedic literature. Every Vedic mantra begins with Om. Om Tat Vishnu Paramam Padam Satapasyanti Surayo Divivachak Churatatam Tat Vipasno Vipanyuvo Jagavamsa Samindante Vishnu Yat Paramam Padam. So that's a mantra from the Rig Veda. It begins with Om. Om Purnam Ada Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vasishyate. The Ishopanishad, the invocation. So every Vedic mantra begins with Om, and that Om is the impersonal representation of Krishna. And Subde K, I am sound in ether. So when you turn your radio on and you hear sound, that sound going through the ether in electromagnetic waves, that is Krishna. That's one of his vibhutis. It's an invisible transfer of information through the ether or through space. And that's happening. That network is happening because of Krishna's inconceivable energies. See? And that was discovered by scientists. In fact, an Indian scientist was one of the main discoverers of how to use electromagnetic waves. German scientist Maxwell, was it Maxwell? Is he German or English? I forget. Anyway, he mathematically discovered electromagnetic waves and predicted that they exist. And then later, Jagadish Chandra Bose made equipment with very limited resources in Calcutta and began to emit them. Before, the scientists only knew of static electricity. Maxwell predicted that somehow that static electricity can move, and Jagadish Chandra Bose made the experiments to prove that you can move the static electricity, that electricity can actually move invisibly through the air without wires. Those are electromagnetic waves. And he was one of the first persons, along with some people. He discovered the radio waves. Those are also electromagnetic waves before Marconi. Although Marconi got credit for it, he had actually discovered it before him. But because he was the first modern accredited scientist, Indian scientist, who got the first patent on his discoveries. The first one in India in modern times. There were many scientists before him in ancient India. Jai Shri Radha Nilamadhava Ki Jai Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vasaya Pritali Simati Bhakti Vrana Swami Namaste Sarasati Devi Guru Guru Chani Nivise Sunyana Paskati. So we've written a whole booklet on Subhash Chandra Bose, Jagadish Chandra Bose. You can read it. It's on our webpage. Okay, so, and then Subdeke Porosham Nrisu, and he's ability in man. So when you see a great cricket artist or a great pianist, that ability is coming from Krishna. Now, how is that? Well, the nervous system of the human being, the tendons, the ligaments, the bones, the joints, all these things are made by Krishna. Human beings don't make those things. We use it like we, you and me, we didn't make the internet, but we can use it, right? In the same way, we didn't make this body. We didn't put it together. Nobody has a patent on the ligaments and the tendons and things like that. That's Krishna that did that. And the ability to use that in amazing ways, that's coming from Krishna. He gives that ability and he can take it away at any time. Just like you see some great fighter or a great athlete, they have an injury and that's it. Or a great singer, he gets cancer of the throat. That's it. They take out his vocal cords. He can't sing anymore. So he can give it and he can take it away at any time. Okay. So then when it says Punya Ganda, now we read the next one. Punya Ganda Prativyam. This is 7-9. Tejas Chasmi Vibhavaso. Jivanam Sarva Bhutanam Tapaschasmi Tapasvisu. I am the original fragrance of the earth. Now, each plant is an individual person, is an individual soul, right? Therefore, due to their individuality, they extract chemicals from the earth in a particular way. Like, for example, if you study fragrance technology, you will see that almost all fragrances are made from the same minerals, but in different concentrations. So the fragrance carnation and the fragrance rose are almost identical in their mineral constituency, but the quantities are different. That's why they can make artificial fragrances. Yeah, there's artificial rose, there's artificial carnation, all these things, because they studied the chemistry of the actual composition through spectroscopic analysis or chromatographic analysis, and they find out the quantities of the different minerals and chemicals. And then they reproduce it approximately. They never get it exactly the same. But they make an approximation of it by using synthetic chemicals. Because mostly, you have hydrogen, you have carbon, you have nitrogen, and so many different minerals. All the constituents are the same. They're just put together differently. So if you study fragrance technology. So, why does the rose plant only extract rose fragrance from the earth? Why does the lemon tree only extract lemon fragrance from the earth? Because they're individuals. Just like, why does a certain woman dress in purple all the time and dark colors? And another woman always dresses in light pinks and yellows. Well, that's their flavor. That's the way they want to dress. So everyone is an individual. Everyone doesn't dress the same. Everyone doesn't look the same. In the same way, every plant is an individual, and they extract in a particular way the chemicals and minerals that are in the earth. All those things are in the earth. See? Okay, so that original fragrance, Punya Ganda Prativyam Cha, I'm the original fragrance of the earth. Krishna has produced the earth that has all those chemicals and minerals and enzymes and so forth in it, and the plants simply extract in a particular way those things, right? So therefore, all the fragrances that they make naturally, that's an indication of Krishna's presence. Just like you have a computer and has a little label on it, Intel inside. That means that Intel has produced the microchips, and they have the intellectual property of those microchips. Right. So when you read the 7th chapter and 10th chapter and 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you'll be able to say Krishna inside the tree, the fragrance, the sun, the moon, and me also, because Krishna is inside everyone as Paramatma. This is teaching us to see Krishna. Bhagavad Gita is all about revealing the presence of Krishna. It's not hiding him. Right? If you read it properly. So you become Krishna conscious by reading Bhagavad Gita with a proper instructor. An improper instructor, you know, like for example, Gandhi wrote a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. He said, Bhagavad Gita is all about nonviolence. Now, I defy you to read Bhagavad Gita and find that it's about nonviolence. It's not about nonviolence. Krishna is convincing Arjuna to fight, not to be nonviolent. That's the whole story. But because Gandhi had his personal agenda, he takes something that's explicit and makes it obtuse because of his personal agenda. See? So whatever commentary he wrote, it has nothing to do with the real meaning of Bhagavad Gita. The real meaning of Bhagavad Gita is to elucidate emphatically and explicitly who is Krishna and to be able to see him present in everything. Intel inside, yeah, on the computer, right. But everything else you see, even including the computer, Krishna inside. Because everything is made from Bhumirapo Nalo Vayukam Mano Buddhirevacha, these eight original elements, and which are Krishna's apara prakriti, inferior spiritual energy. By the way, all these elements are eternal. The forms that are made with these elements are not eternal. Those 8,400,000 species, or the skyscraper, or the microphone, or the harmonium, or the carpet, or the rug, these things, the forms are not eternal, but the energy, the earth, the water, fire, are eternal. But the reason we get baffled is because the inferior spiritual energy goes through two stages, avyakta and vyakta. Sometimes it's visible, and sometimes it becomes invisible, although it's still existing. That's why it's more difficult to understand material energy than it is to understand spiritual energy. More difficult. Because at one point it disappears. You can't see it. Just like the Twin Towers were there, then they blew them up, and you don't see them anymore. They're not there anymore. See? The energy is there. They took all the junk away after it collapsed. They took it away and put it somewhere in New Jersey or somewhere else. Right? So the Twin Towers are still existing, potentially, in all the jumbled up concrete and steel meshes and computers and everything. But you don't see it anymore. See? So the energy is eternal, but the forms are not eternal. So Krishna says he's the original fragrance. He's the heat and fire. Fire has two notable qualities, heat and light. You can't really separate them in fire, right? But you can perceive that they're different because the heat is emanating in waves and so is the fire, you know, the light. That heat is Krishna. And the light is also Krishna. And both are his energies. And he says, I'm the life of all that lives. Yes, because Mamayavam Sa Jivaloka Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. So if you look 15:7, chapter 15, verse 7, Krishna says to Arjuna, Mamayavam Sa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. The living entities in this conditional world are my eternal fragmental parts. In other words, every one of us is coming from Krishna. We are as eternal. Fragmental means we are a distinct individual, but we're coming from Krishna. And Krishna is a distinct individual. The individuality of Krishna and of each of us, is eternal. So there's some mystery here. We are simultaneously one and inconceivably different. Our infinitesimal small size means we can never be equal to Krishna. The part is never equal to the whole, although the part contains almost all the same qualities as the whole. So this verse 15:7 is very important because it explains that we are sanatana, eternal fragmental part and parcel of the Lord. Okay, so if we go back again. So therefore, when Krishna says, punyoganda prithivyam cha, Tejas Tasmi Bhava. So Jivanam Sarvabhutanam. He is the life of all that lives. Well, yeah, because we're part and parcel of the Lord. We're inseparable from the Lord, and at the same time, we are eternally an individual, as is Krishna. And then he says, I am the penance of all ascetics. So when you see yogis performing great tapasya, that ability is coming from Krishna. So let's read the purport. Go ahead and read the purport.
Punya means that which is not decomposed. Punya is original. Everything in the material world has a certain flavor or fragrance, as the flavor or fragrance in a flower, or in the earth, in water, in fire, in air, etc. The uncontaminated flavor, the original flavor which permeates everything, is Krishna. Similarly, everything has a particular original taste, and this taste can be changed by the mixture of chemicals.
You see, as I was saying, the chemicals are almost the same, but by changing their the composition of them or the quantities of them, you get different tastes. Just like you have a masala, right? Mm-hmm. So there are different types of masalas. Most of the time, they all have the same ingredients. You know, there's, you know, the jeera, and there's some hing, and there's some methi, and this and that. You know, but if you alter the quantities, you get different tastes. Then you add certain other things, the secondary things like the amchur and this and that, and you get different tastes. But you're using more or less the same quantities and the same ingredients.
So everything original has some smell, some fragrance, and some taste. Vibhavasu means fire. Without fire, we cannot run factories, we cannot cook, etc. And that fire is Krishna. The heat in the fire is Krishna. According to Vedic medicine, indigestion is due to a low temperature in the belly. So even for digestion, fire is needed. In Krishna consciousness, we become aware that earth, water, fire, air, and every active principle, all chemicals, and all material elements are due to Krishna. The duration of man's life is also due to Krishna. Therefore, by the grace of Krishna, man can prolong his life or diminish it. So Krishna consciousness is active in every sphere.
There you are. So now if you look chapter 15, verse number 14. See, there are very delicate balances in the body. And when those balances are lost, you get sick and you have pain and you have swelling and you have blockages. So read that verse.
Translation, I am the fire of digestion in bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of foodstuff. Purport. According to Ayurvedic Shastra, we understand that there is a fire in the stomach which digests all food sent there. When the fire is not blazing, there is no hunger, and when the fire is in order, we become hungry. Sometimes, when the fire is not going nicely, treatment is required. In any case, this fire is representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedic mantras, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 5.9.1, also confirm that the Supreme Lord or Brahman is situated in the form of fire within the stomach and is digesting all kinds of foodstuff. I am Agnir Vaishnava.
I am Agnir Vaishvanaro Yogyam Antapurushe Yenidam Anam Pachyate.
Therefore, since he is helping the digestion of all kinds of foodstuff, the living entity is not independent in the eating process. Unless the Supreme Lord helps him in digesting, there is no possibility of eating.
You see, therefore, I am the fire of digestion. That without that fire in the stomach, which is a form of hydrochloric acid, you can't digest any, especially any protein. People who can't digest protein, they get sick very easily. See? Therefore, they have to take certain types of pills that increase the secretion of hydrochloric acid in their stomach. And if there's too much hydrochloric acid, then you have to take something else. You get acid reflux, so then you have to take other types of mineral supplements to neutralize that acidity. That would normally happen in your body naturally, but sometimes people eat too much acidic foods that cause acidic residues in the intestines and so forth, and that excess acidity cannot be neutralized by the normal mineral salts that the body excretes. So therefore you get acid reflux and you get ulcers, pylora and different things. It's very, very, you get really sick and you can die from it. So there are delicate balances in the body, acid alkaline balances, and when they become disrupted, you get very sick. So in order to digest, you have to have the fire of digestion. Krishna is that fire of digestion. And the Sanskrit verse is that
I am Agnir.
Right. Pranapana samayukta pachami anam chaturvidam. Yeah. I am the fire of the Vaishvanara. So, okay, go ahead.
He thus produces and digests foodstuff, and by his grace we are enjoying life. And in the Vedanta Sutra, this is also confirmed. The Lord is situated within sound and within the body, within the air, and even within the stomach as digestive force. There are four kinds of foodstuff. Some are swallowed, some are chewed, some are licked up, and some are sucked. And he is the digestive force for all of them.
Yes. So again, we're learning how to see Krishna in everything. Not that everything is Krishna. The dog is not Krishna. But the dog cannot exist without the presence of Krishna. The dog cannot function without Krishna's help. The whole point of this Bhagavad Gita is to learn that nothing is independent of Krishna. Whether you want to engage in sinful activity or you want to engage in pious activity, you need Krishna's help. Whether you want to be a basketball player or you want to be a cricket player, you need Krishna's help. So, okay. So now, the next verse. So we're beginning in the seventh chapter. That's why seventh chapter is important. You're beginning to learn how to see Krishna in everything, which means you become Krishna conscious. That's spiritual vision. You learn to see everything in relationship with Krishna rather than everything independent of Krishna as the materialists do. The materialists, when they write all their books of philosophy and all their other books, they want to convince you that there is no God, that we are independent. But actually, if you learn, the reality is we're completely dependent. And God is present everywhere, otherwise nothing would work. So next one, Bijam Mam Sarvabhutanam Vidhiparta Sanatanam Buddhir Buddhimatam Masmi Tejas Tejasvinam Aham. So 7th chapter, 10th verse. He says, O Arjuna, know that I am the original seed of all existences. It's not Monsanto that makes seeds. They might try and alter them and play around with them, but Krishna is the seed-giving father of all living entities. A seed is an amazing thing, and a little thing like that, there's enough information to grow a gigantic banyan tree or a Douglas fir tree, or an eggplant plant, or a beanstalk, or, you know, seeds have tremendous potency. That's why a lot of animals just eat seeds. Birds, they love seeds. They live off of seeds because there's so much potency in a seed, right? Okay, so he says that Bijamam Sarvabhutanam Vidipartha Sanantanam. So this Vidipartha Sanantanam is very important, that Vidhi, try to understand, O son of Pritarjuna, Sanatanam, that he is the original seed of all existences, right? The original and eternal seed of all existences. Buddhi buddhimatam asmi, and he is the intelligence of the intelligent. What is intelligence exactly? It's the power of discernment, of being able to see what is good, what is bad, what is true, what is false. That power is coming from Krishna, and he can take it away from you also. We have so many people that see that what is true is false, and what is false is true, the opposite of real intelligence. So he can take the power away from people, and he can give it to people to be able to see correctly. So that intelligence of the intelligent, that's coming from Krishna. And then, of course, Tejas, Tejas Vrinam Aham, and I am the prowess of all powerful men. Okay, so read this purport.
Bijam means seed. Krishna is the seed of everything. There are various living entities, movable and inert. Birds, beasts, men and many other living creatures are moving living entities. Trees and plants, however, are inert. They cannot move but only stand. Every entity is contained within the scope of 8,400,000 species of life. Some of them are moving and some of them are inert. In all cases, however, the seed of their life is Krishna. As stated in Vedic literature, Brahman, or the Supreme Absolute Truth, is that from which everything is emanating. Krishna is Parabrahman, the Supreme Spirit. Brahman is impersonal, and Parabrahman is personal. Impersonal Brahman is situated in the personal aspect, that is stated in Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, originally, Krishna is the source of everything. He is the root. As the root of a tree maintains the whole tree, Krishna, being the original root of all things, maintains everything in this material manifestation. This is also confirmed in the Vedic literature, Katha Upanishad 2.2.13.
Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo vidadati kamam.
He is the prime eternal among all eternals. He is the supreme living entity of all living entities, and he alone is maintaining all life. One cannot do anything without intelligence, and Krishna also says that he is the root of all intelligence. Unless a person is intelligent, he cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna.
Right. So, the last verse of the 14th chapter, Brahmano hi pratisthaham amritasya vyasya sasvatasya cha Sasvatasya dharmasya sukhaisya kantikasya. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So here, as Prabhupada says, that impersonal Brahman is situated in the personal aspect. That is stated in Bhagavad Gita, 14.27. 14.27. And you notice here he says, Brahman, or the Supreme Absolute Truth, is that from which everything is emanating. Krishna is Parabrahman, the Supreme Spirit. Brahman is impersonal, and Parabrahman is personal. So, light, darkness is a function of light. Light is not a function of darkness. You can't get light from darkness, but you can get darkness from light. The absence of light produces darkness. You see? The absence of darkness doesn't produce light. So darkness is a function of light. So the impersonal concept is a function of the personal concept. When there's absence of knowledge of the personal concept of God, that becomes impersonal. And just like it says, impersonal, even in English, impersonal. It doesn't say there's no word for impersonal. Impersonal comes from personal. You understand? There's no word for impersonal. Okay, let's say non-entity. Well, non-entity, the entity is the real thing, and the non-entity is a function of it. Personal is the real thing, and impersonal is a function of it. All right? Light is the original thing, and the absence of light is darkness. So therefore Krishna says, because he's the original person, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sachit Ananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarva Karana Karanam. So he's the cause of all causes. He's the original person. He's Adi Deva, he's Ajam, not born. He's Adi, original. So in this way, the statement of Prabhupada is absolutely correct. Impersonal Brahman is situated in the personal aspect. That is stated in Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, originally, Krishna is the source of everything. He is the root. As the root of a tree maintains the whole tree, Krishna, being the original root of all things, maintains everything in this material manifestation. So this verse from the Katha Upanishad, Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahunam, Yo Vidadati Kamam. It's very important. He says that Krishna is the supreme eternal amongst all eternals, and he is supplying food to all others. Is that right? Is he supplying us food? Of course. We're not producing the food. He gives us the seed, he gives us the earth, he gives us the rain, and he gives us the sun. Otherwise, you will have no food, right? You don't have the seed. What's going to grow if you don't have the seed? You don't have the earth. It's very difficult for it to grow into a full-grown plant and give fruits and vegetables. And if you don't have rain, like in California, you know, and you don't have the sun and the moon. Right. So, therefore, Nitya Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam, he is the supreme eternal amongst all eternals, and he is providing food to everyone else. He's maintaining all the other eternals. That means he's the supreme personality of God. It's another, if you look in the second chapter, 12th verse, in the purport, the full verse is there, Tam Atmastam Yena Pasyanti Dieras Tesam Santi Saswati Natarasam. The Lord says clearly that he himself, Arjuna, all kings who are assembled on the battlefield are eternally individual beings, and that the Lord is eternally the maintainer of the individual living entities, both in their conditioned and their liberated situations. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the supreme individual person, and Arjuna, the Lord's eternal associate, and all the kings assembled there are individual eternal persons. It is not that they did not exist as individuals in the past, and it is not that they will not remain eternal individuals. Their individuality existed in the past, and their individuality will continue in the future without interruption. Therefore, there's no cause for lamentation. So the point is, all living entities are eternal. Mamayavamsa, Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. They're all Sanatana, eternal. But Krishna is maintaining all the others. You and I are not maintaining all the others. That means we're not God. That's the difference between the Jiva Atma and Paramatma. He's able to maintain all living entities by supplying sun, seeds, earth, water, moon, rain, like that. We can't do that. Therefore, we can never, I mean, sometimes people say, so-and-so is God. Right? We won't name all the names, but there's so many pseudo-gods all over the world, and especially in India. Is he feeding everyone in the not just on the earth, in the whole universe? No, he's not. Maybe in his village or around, you know, a perimeter of 10, 15 miles, you know, he can feed everyone, but not in the whole universe. And he's not feeding all the animals and the insects and the birds and the elephants and the snakes. See? So people don't understand who is God. They have this very cheap, low-class, limited understanding. And because of that, they end up worshiping rascals. Okay. So then, next one. Balam balavatam chaham kamaraga vivarjitam dharma virudo bhutesu kamosmi bharatarsabha. He says, I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. So who is that? That is Lord Rama, Hanuman, Lakshman, right, Shatrughna, so forth. It's also Arjuna. It's definitely not Duryodhan, right? Devoid of passion and desire. There's very few people like that, right? So, I'm the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. This is a description of a genuine kshatriya. I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles, O Lord of the Bharatas, Arjuna. So, Krishna is not against sex life, as long as it's performed for procreating good children. And one takes the responsibility of raising those children in Krishna consciousness, then it's bona fide. And it's spiritual. So people have a very, very confused idea about this a sexual union. They think it's meant for personal pleasure. No, it's meant for procreating good children and taking the responsibility to raise them properly in Krishna consciousness. So let's read this purport.
The strong man's strength should be applied to protect the weak, not for personal aggression. Similarly, sex life, according to religious principles or dharma, should be for the propagation of children, not otherwise. The responsibility of parents is then to make their offspring Krishna conscious.
There you are. Very, very simple and pure. Ichaiva sattvika rajas abhava tamasa sajachasraye matayaveti tanviti natvaham te sute mahi. Know that all states of being, be they of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. I am in one sense everything, but I am independent. I am not under the modes of material nature, for they, on the contrary, are within me. So when Krishna says, in one sense I am everything, but I am independent, that means that Krishna is everything, but everything is not Krishna. And this is also explained in the ninth chapter, Mayatatamidam Sarvam Jagat Abhyakta Murtina Matstani Sarvabhutesu Nachaham Tesu Avastita 9.4. Krishna says, by me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. So, all beings are in me, meaning that Krishna is everything. But I am not in them, means that everything is not Krishna. So, if everything was Krishna, we could put the dog on the altar. Any dog on the altar and worship it. Right? Or you could put a urinal on the altar and worship, because everything is Krishna. But no, Krishna is everything, but everything is not Krishna. Because he's still in the, although everything is made from Krishna's energies, and there's two major energies, the para and apara prakriti, the spirit, the superior spiritual energy and the inferior spiritual energy. So anything you see is made of these two things. Right? But Krishna is still independent. And how is that? He has to be, otherwise he's not God. He's not subject to the laws of material nature and karma. He's not subject to the three modes of material nature, although he created them, but he's not subject to them. As he's saying in this verse, Yechaiva Satvika Bhava Rajasas Tamasas Chaye. So this is helping us to understand the difference between us as living Jiva Atma and Krishna as Paramatma. People confuse this. In fact, you can go on the internet right now and you will find that impersonalists, and there are many more impersonalists than personalists. In fact, 98% of all gurus in India are impersonalists. 98%. 98! It's not like 90 or 60 or something. 98% are impersonalists. So they think that at some point the Atma becomes Paramatma. Have you ever heard that? Atma becomes Paramatma. You can look it up on the internet right now. Let's just look at it. Let's go real quick. Let's do a real quick thing. Look up. Atma becomes Paramatma. Atma becomes Paramatma. Let's see what comes up. It's interesting. Atma becomes Paramatma. Let's see who comes up. Which criminals come up? Atma becomes Paramatma.
YogaPhilosophy.com has something interesting.
What does it say?
Both the Supreme Lord and the living entity are known as Atma. How is that possible? The first sentence is wrong. The first sentence is wrong. How can the Supreme Lord and the living entity be just Atma? Supreme Lord is
no, but that contradicts Mamayavamsa Jivaloka Jivabhuta Sanatanam. That all living entities are my part and parcels, minute part and parcels. Krishna is Paramatma, living entities are Jivatma. What other nonsense do they say there?
There is a Swami Ram Sukhdas.
Swami Ram Sukhdas.
Why did they take the name of Ram and
no, because no, they have to piggyback on Ram to look like they're bona fide.
Swami Ram Sukhdas.
He's just telling simply
what's he saying?
Atma can be attained today itself.
So there is one by Samvatpan.
What did I say?
You yourself become Paramatma.
Yeah, that's the point. You yourself become Paramatma.
Shiva, Shiv Krupanand Swami, His Holiness Shiv Krupanand Swami.
His unholiness, yes. His hole in the head, yeah. That's
but this is seriously very bad for
98% of the gurus in India are impersonalists.
Why does not have any form?
Right, there's another one. Another.
Why do they have to take the name of Ram and say such nonsense?
Because they piggyback so that, you know, it's like the fly on the nose of the king, thinking he's the king. Let's see. So anyway, just to give you an idea, a little flavor of all the hodgepodge in this world, right? So when we read Bhagavad Gita now, we're understanding this is not, you don't become Krishna. It's impossible. The part never becomes the whole. You know.
You say in my life, the last point, 96th point, in my life I accepted my Sadguru, the true Guru, as Paramatma, and that is why in this short life I could reach so close to Paramatma. Then the search for Paramatma ended, and I experienced the inner satisfaction that I had realized Paramatma God.
As himself. That's what he's saying. Tatvamasi, I am that. But that's not the translation. Tatvamasi. Tatvamasi means I am his. Not that I am he. Yeah. Okay. So, all material activities in the world, now we're back on 7:12. All material activities in the world being conducted under the three modes of material nature. Although these material modes of nature are emanations from the Supreme Lord Krishna, he is not subject to them. For instance, under the state laws, one may be punished, but the king, the lawmaker, is not subject to that law. Similarly, all the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are emanations from the Supreme Lord Krishna. But Krishna is not subject to material nature. Therefore, he is nirguna, which means that these gunas or modes, although issuing from him, do not affect him. This is one of the special characteristics of Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're beginning to learn very specific knowledge in the seventh chapter about who Bhagavan is. Well, the real Bhagavan, not these upstart Bhagavans. And this is one of the special characteristics of Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is, he is nirgunam. It doesn't mean he has no qualities. It means that the modes of material nature emanate from him, but he's not subject to them. And he has qualities, but his qualities are transcendental, whereas our qualities at this point are conditioned by the three modes of material nature. So there's a major difference between our qualities and Krishna's qualities. Then the next verse, 7:13, Tribhir guna mayer bhavir ebi sarvam idam jagat mohita nabijanati mam ibyam param avyayam. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. So now, to understand properly Krishna, one must rise above the influence of the modes of material nature, otherwise you cannot understand it. As long as we're affected by sattva, rajas, and tamas, especially rajas and tamas, there's no way, impossible, to understand anything about Krishna. And this verse makes it very clear. So let's read this purport. Yeah, yes. The whole world.
The whole world is enchanted by the three modes of material nature. Those who are bewildered by these three modes cannot understand that transcendental to this material nature is the Supreme Lord Krishna. Every living entity under the influence of material nature has a particular type of body and a particular type of psychological and biological activities accordingly. There are four classes of men functioning in the three material modes of nature. Those who are purely in the mode of goodness are called brahmanas. Those who are purely in the mode of passion are called kshatriyas. Those who are in the mode of both passion and ignorance are called vaishyas. Those who are completely in ignorance are called shudras. And those who are less than that are animals or animal life. However, these designations are not permanent. I may be either a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, or whatever. In any case, this life is temporary. But although life is temporary and we do not know what we are going to be in the next life, by the spell of this illusory energy, we consider ourselves in terms of this bodily conception of life. And we think that we are American, Indian, Russian, or Brahmana, Hindu, Muslim, etc. And if we become entangled with the modes of material nature, then we forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is behind all these modes. So, Lord Krishna says that living entities deluded by these three modes of nature do not understand that behind the material background is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many different kinds of living entities.
Oh, human, they might think, he's Gujarati. Krishna is Gujarati. Yeah, because he lived in Dwarka, that means he's Gujarati. Is it? So, it's all nonsense. Go ahead.
There are many different kind of living entities, human beings, demigods, animals, etc. And each and every one of them is under the influence of material nature. And all of them have forgotten the transcendental personality of Godhead. Those who are in the modes of...
He's talking about the demigods also have forgotten. If the demigods have forgotten, what about us? Go ahead.
Those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance, and even those who are in mode of goodness, cannot go beyond the impersonal Brahman conception of the absolute truth. They are bewildered before
this. This is why there's so many Mayavadis, impersonalists, in the West and in the East. All the Buddhists, almost all of Islam is impersonalist. You would think no, because they're talking about Allah, but their concept of Allah is impersonal. I've had many discussions with many different Muslims, because the impersonalism filtered into Islam also. Muhammad, in his explanation, when he recited the Quran, he didn't produce the Quran. He was just a conduit for it from the Archangel Gabriel. But he actually went to heaven at one time, and he saw the Archangel Gabriel, who was a person, right? And he didn't see Allah, but he actually heard Allah, right? So that means Allah has a tongue, he has, you know, vocal cords and so forth, right? So and I asked the one imam that came here, and I said, do you have any knowledge of God being a person? He said, we don't have that knowledge. It's not given to us specifically, but we cannot deny it either. So he was a highly educated imam, educated in Al-Aqsa University in Egypt, which is the top Muslim university in the world, right? So he's the only one that ever answered me like that. Every other Muslim I ever asked, most of all of them were saying, giving me an answer that God is not a person. This guy had education, so he said, we don't have any knowledge of him being a person, but we cannot deny it. So. Well, yeah, because they don't have any... We have tons of specific knowledge. We know what Krishna looks like, what he dresses, where he lives, what he likes to eat, and, you know, we have tons of knowledge about Krishna. It was not revealed. All that was revealed was you cannot make an image of God, that's all, in the Old Testament. You cannot make an image of God. It doesn't mean he doesn't have a form, it's just that you're not allowed to imagine a form. Is it? So it's very interesting that as long as people are influenced by sattva, rajas, and tamas, it's impossible to know anything substantial about Krishna. In the mode of goodness, you can begin to learn if you're progressing and to, you know, on a fast track up to transcendental goodness or visuddha sattva, where you rise above the influence of the modes of material nature, then you can know. So there's a very interesting point about Krishna consciousness, and I think we should understand this right now. And this is one second, let me find it. It says that the special advantage of Krishna consciousness is that with one stroke, one can be raised to the to the point of being transcendental. Okay. There you go. Let's look on chapter 17. The last verse. Says, okay, one second, let's see. When it takes three computers to transcend down to all three modes of material. Okay, anyway, 14th chapter, 26th verse, Krishna clearly says, Mam chayo vibhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunam samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. So he says that one who is always engaged in the devotional service and does not fall down under any circumstance at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. So with one stroke, one is transcendental to the modes of material nature. If you engage full time in devotional services, this is how Prabhupada spread the movement. He knew this. So in the beginning, when the movement started, we had to completely surrender everything we were doing and move into the temple and live 24 hours a day, a regimented lifestyle. That's what I did. That's what many, many devotees did. And because of that, we were able to function in Krishna consciousness and understand about Krishna because we gave up everything and just served in the temple 24 hours a day. We went out on Sankirtan every day, distributed books, cooked. We had no time. There was no television. There was no cell phones. There was no internet. Nothing. It was just Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day, right in the middle of the big cities, you know. We were completely taken out of material life. And that's why the movement, you know, was able to be spread very, very dynamically all over the world. Because what this verse says, that at once transcends the modes of material nature, 14:26, and thus comes to the level of Brahman. It's amazing. I had this other quote. I can't find it now. No, there's a, what? Yeah. 8:28. Okay. Yeah, it should be at the end of the. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the beauty of Krishna consciousness, however, is that by one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one can surpass all the rituals of the different orders of life. So by one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one surpasses. But actually, this verse 14:27 means, at once, by unfailing devotional service, at once one transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Okay, that's the difference, because every other process of yoga is very gradual, very slow and gradual. You know, you have asana and pranayama and all these different steps to samadhi, right? And it takes a long time. But in Krishna consciousness, one stroke, you can rise above all rituals, and if you're unfailingly engaged in devotional service, immediately you transcend the modes of material nature. And you can begin to understand very effectively so many things about Krishna. But what is the whole purpose of understanding? It's to surrender completely to the Lord and engage full time in His service. Okay. So did we finish that, the purport? Go ahead.
They are bewildered before the Supreme Lord in His personal feature, which possesses all beauty, opulence, knowledge, strength, fame, and renunciation. When even those who are in goodness cannot understand, what hope is there for those in passion and ignorance? Krishna consciousness is transcendental to all these three modes of material nature, and those who are fully established in Krishna consciousness are actually liberated.
Okay. They are bewildered before the Supreme Lord in his personal form. That's a fact. And even those who are in goodness cannot understand, what hope is there for those in passion and ignorance? There you are. That's exactly a fact. Krishna consciousness is transcendental to all these three modes of material nature, and those who are truly established in Krishna consciousness are actually liberated. So he says, truly established. That's the key words. They are actually liberated. There's a lot to be said about that. That's explained in depth in the fifth chapter. Let's look at 5:19 to 5:26. So 5:19 says, those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. So the equanimity of mind, the equalness, the peace of mind, as mentioned above, is a sign of self-realization. Those who have actually attained to such a stage should be considered to have conquered material conditions, specifically birth and death. As long as one identifies with this body, he is considered a conditioned soul. But as soon as he is elevated to the stage of equanimity, through realization of the self. And so equanimity, let's look it up in a dictionary. Equanimity. It means the steadiness of the mind, the peacefulness of the mind, the tranquility. They're not affected by happiness and distress, heat and cold, riches and poverty, fame and infamy. They're not affected by the dualities of life. Duke su anadvigna mana, suke su vikata spriha. This is a verse in Bhagavad Gita. 2:56. Vitaraga bhaya krodha stita dir munir uchyate. One who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. This is the definition, Bhagavad Gita, of equanimity of mind. What does it say?
The state of psychological stability and composure, which is undisturbed by experience of or exposure to emotions, pain, or other phenomena.
Right.
That can cause others to lose their balance of their mind.
Right.
Possession, cool-headedness, and presence of mind.
So specifically, it's 2:56, second chapter, 56 verse. Duke so anavigna mana, suke suvigata spriha, vitaraga bhaya krodha, man stita dir munir uchyate. So one is a stita di, whose mind is steady. Stita di munir, he's called a sage whose mind is steady because he's not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. Okay? So now,
it is also defined in like Patanjali Yoga Sutra.
What's it say?
Equanimity is also mentioned in Patanjali Yoga Sutra as one of the four sublime attitudes, along with loving kindness, compassion, joy. In Islam, it is said that Muslim can be understood to mean in state of being a Muslim can be understood to mean one is in state of equanimity.
Equanimity.
The word Islam is which means which denotes the peace that comes from total surrender and acceptance.
Yeah. But here, I mean, yeah. Okay, let's read the purport to 256. First of all, one who's not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, meaning adhyatmika, adhibhutika, adhidaivika miseries, or elated when there's happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. So let's read that purport. The word muni.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word muni means one who can agitate his mind in various ways for mental speculation without coming to a factual conclusion. It is said that every muni has a different angle of vision, and unless a muni differs from other munis, he cannot be called a muni in the strict sense of the term. Nasav
Nachasa Rishir Yasyamatam Nabinam.
Nam Mahabharata 1.113.117. But a Sthitadhir Muni, as mentioned herein by the Lord, is different from an ordinary Muni. The Sthitadhir Muni is always in Krishna consciousness, for he has exhausted all his business of creative speculation. He is called Prashanta Nishesha Mano Rat Antara, or one who has surpassed the stage of mental speculation and has come to the conclusion that Lord Sri Krishna or Vasudeva is everything. Vasudeva sarvam iti sa mahatma sudurlabha. He is called a muni fixed in mind. Such a fully Krishna conscious person is not at all disturbed by the onslaughts of the threefold miseries, for he accepts all miseries as the mercy of the Lord, thinking himself only worthy of more trouble due to his past misdeed, and he sees that his miseries by the grace of the Lord are minimized to the lowest.
So this is the example of a pure devotee. It doesn't mean they have no trouble or no problems, but they're not disturbed by it because they have absolute faith that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How did they get that faith? By regularly hearing Bhagavad Gita, as we're doing now, learning who Krishna is, how great he is, how wonderful he is, and how no one can be equal to or greater than him, right? So therefore, once you actually know who Krishna is and you have absolute faith that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, Ishwara Parama Krishna, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes, and we're learning, you know, Rasaham Apsakontya, Punyaganda Prativyamcha, and Budhir Budhi Matam Masmi, and Bijam Mam Sarvabhuta Anam, all these verses that explaining his opulences and mystical powers, then you're fixed in mind. You're not disturbed. And if there is problems, you think that you deserve it. Because of past misdeeds. And you know that Krishna will protect you, so you have no fear. And if everything is going all right, it's by the mercy of the Lord. And that we're actually unworthy of that happiness. So this is the mentality of a devotee, the real devotee, not the fake devotee, but the real devotee. Okay, go ahead.
Similarly, when he is happy, he gives credit to the Lord, thinking himself unworthy of the happiness. He realizes that it is due only to the Lord's grace that he is in such a comfortable condition and able to render better service to the Lord. And for the service of the Lord, he is always daring and active and is not influenced by attachment or aversion. Attachment means accepting things for one's own sense gratification, and detachment is the absence of such sensual attachment. But one fixed in Krishna consciousness has neither attachment nor detachment because his life is dedicated in the service of the Lord.
So he doesn't have attachment or detachment, he has dedication. See? Attachment means you're attracted to something material. Detachment means you're very frustrated because you lost what you had. Right? And then you're full of hatred and resentment. devotee doesn't have that attachment. How can you be attached to something that never belonged to you in the first place? Everything belongs to Krishna. And how can you be detached from something that never belonged to you in the first place? It belongs to Krishna. So the only thing you can have is dedication. Dedicate everything to Krishna. This attachment and detachment are materialistic emotions. So the Mayavadis who say, you know, I'm not attached to anything, you know, this is all Maya. That's materialistic position. How can you not be attached to something that can be used in Krishna's service? You see? So that's false detachment. Anushaktasya Vishayan Antaratam Anushaktasya Vishayan. It's a very important verse. Let's read it because it's produced by Yataraham upayunjitaha nirbanda krishna sambande yukta vairagyam uchyate papa chikataya buddha hari sambandhu vastana mamukshu bihi parityago valgu 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 yeah. So this is verse. Okay. Sixth chapter, 10th verse in the purport. Vairagyam falgu katyate. Right. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. On the other hand, one who rejects everything without knowledge of its relationship to Krishna is not as complete in his renunciation. In other words, it's false renunciation. 6:10 in the purport, near the end of that purport. So if there's something can be used in Krishna's service and we reject it, that is false renunciation. And if when we're not attached to anything, but at the same time we accept everything in relation to Krishna, then one is rightly situated above possessiveness. One should be near mama. Nothing belongs to me. But that doesn't mean you reject everything. That means you learn how to use it properly in Krishna's service. You see, if we look at the second chapter, seventy-first verse. Real desirelessness is desire for the satisfaction of Krishna, not an artificial attempt to abolish desires. The living entity cannot be desireless or senseless, but he does have to change the quality of the desires. A materially desireless person certainly knows that everything belongs to Krishna. Isha Vaisham Idam Sarvam. And therefore he does not falsely claim proprietorship over anything. This transcendental knowledge is based on self-realization, namely knowing perfectly well that every living entity is an eternal part and parcel of Krishna and spiritual identity, and that the eternal position of the living entity is therefore never on the level of Krishna or greater than him. This understanding of Krishna consciousness is the basic principle of real peace. You see how this is all related. So continuous 6:10, a Krishna conscious person knows well that everything belongs to Krishna, and thus he is always free from feelings of personal possession. As such, he has no hankering for anything on his own personal account. He knows how to accept things in favor of Krishna consciousness and how to reject things unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. He is always aloof from material things because he is always transcendental, and he is always alone, having nothing to do with persons not in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a person in Krishna consciousness is the perfect yogi. This is all transcendental knowledge. This is all transcendental knowledge. Thing. Yeah.
Would that attachment automatically elevate itself from a material to a spiritual level? Or are we using itself to
Well, there's a symptom when a person is only attached to the Lord, right? That then they would give up all their engagements and just serve, you know, serve the Lord. Like Hanuman, does he have any other engagement? No. Is he trying to become an IT specialist? No. Does he work for somebody? No. So, when you have no other desire than to serve the Lord, then you would give everything else up and just serve the Lord and not be afraid, knowing well that the Lord will take care of you. Now, should we do that? Like, okay, Hari Vilas said this, I'm going out, quitting my job, I'm going to give up my apartment and live in a cardboard box under the I-5 bridge. No, you're not going to do that. You wouldn't be able to do that. You're not capable of doing that, right? But you can gradually work toward that goal. Gradually. By hearing and chanting in the association of devotees on a regular basis. And then if that's really your desire, not some artificial desire or some immature desire, but that's really your desire, then Krishna will make arrangements so you can actually do that. And it'll be gradual. It's not immediate. You're not going to do like we did 30, 40, 50 years ago. Just give everything up. Join the temple. You know, when we joined the temple commander grabbed us by the feet, turned us upside down, and shook us like that so that everything fell out of our pockets. We had nothing. If we had anything, we had to give it to the temple. If we had a car or an inheritance, we had to give it all to the temple. We couldn't have it. Because as long as you think I have something, you're not going to really surrender. You know what I'm saying? So that was like a commando movement, you know.
There's no fallback plan.
Because there's nothing to fall back to. If you left, you left with nothing, right? But we don't do that anymore because, you know, it's a gradual process. You know, that was an emergency situation where Prabhupada had to spread the movement. And it didn't happen to everyone. It happened to a lot of people who were living a hippie lifestyle, who already were renounced materially, not from sense gratification, but materially they were renounced. But it so happened that many of these people were well-educated people that had good families. They came from good families, and I had a college education, right? It wasn't that I was, you know, a hippie. It was nothing, you know. And many, many of the devotees that joined it were well-educated and highly evolved intellectually. But they were renounced. They were living renounced, not from sense gratification, but from material things, right? So then Prabhupada put the icing on the cake and gave them the temple schedule and temple life so they could be renounced from sense gratification. And then immediately all these people were able to do incredible things. By Prabhupada's potency. We don't expect people to do that today because we're looking for long-term stable development and people being evolving gradually, step by step, without any artificial, fanatical, impetuous decisions, so that every step you make, you're not going to step back. You're going to go forward with certitude, right? Absolutely certain of what you're doing. No doubts. Yeah. Okay, maybe we'll stop now and continue. See, we're just going to go over one chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, right? But the whole philosophy is coming out. And we didn't finish in the fifth chapter now, where it explains in very deep detail equanimity of the mind, which is a symptom of an advanced devotee who has risen above the influence of the modes of material nature. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.